Hello, hello, and welcome to the Through Ball, a podcast presented by WVUA 90.7, the Capstone. I'm MG Cease. Today I'm going to be talking about the Arkansas game that the University of Alabama women's soccer team just had, the loss there. I will offer my analysis, a list of key players, as per usual. Then I'll be bringing on a guest. He was here on episode 2, if you remember, Sam Hallam, longtime fan. We're going to have a conversation, and I will offer a preview into the Ole Miss game this coming Sunday. So stay tuned. So Alabama women's soccer returns back to Tuscaloosa for the first time since the home opener in mid-September. They faced the Arkansas Razorbacks. Ultimately, they lost 2-1 very soon into the first overtime period. There looked like there were fewer Arkansas fans at this game who journeyed to Tuscaloosa than the Tennessee fans who journeyed from Knoxville. The Arkansas fans were loud. They did not agree with many calls that the ref made, and where the press table is, I was seated in the opposing fan section for both games, so I heard their thoughts. That's for certain. Ultimately, there were 115 fans in attendance. Now, this is post Hurricane Delta, and Tuscaloosa was projected to be in the cone. Ultimately didn't receive that much bad weather. However, there was on and off rain throughout the game. I'm not really sure if you could call it rain. Really, it was more of a heavy mist, a drizzle, if you will. There were a few random, incredibly sunny stretches of the game, but otherwise, it was certainly overcast. It was kind of ominous. Honestly, I thought it was fitting for a matchup between two SEC powerhouses. There was somewhat of a student fan section at this game. I spoke with Ben Smith prior to kickoff. He graduated in 2016 or 2017. He says he doesn't actually remember because it has been so long, but he has been doing fan section stuff for soccer for a while now. And honestly, it sounds like he's done some stuff for multiple sports. He said he had the fan gear, which was lucky because it was getting ready to be used for the volleyball season. And then he said that the coach called him, I'm assuming Wes Hart, and asked if he was in town, and then got him on his list to come and create a fan section. Now, the women's team was back in Tuscaloosa, and Mattingly and Sanchez Corretto, among others, were back on the team. If you will remember the game in Gainesville against Florida, three players were listed as quarantined and unable to travel, as well as one player out on a red card. I caught Riley Mattingly, center forward's eye, while she was running into the locker room pregame. I said, "How are you?" She said, "Glad to be back. Should be a fun day." I'm going to be honest. I'm not sure if it was or wasn't a fun day. It was certainly an exciting game. But for Alabama to lose again, I'm not sure if that's what she considers a fun day. I would assume not. Let's get into my analysis a little bit here. So Alabama kept up with Arkansas, but I didn't feel really at any point that they had total control of or dominated the game. Kind of felt like they were chasing Arkansas for the most part. Now, I follow somebody on Twitter who references Instat a lot, which is not the statistics that I typically use in my coverage of soccer. I tend to use these statistics that are given to the media by Alabama or the opposing team. But these are some interesting statistics that I found on Instat. So the percentage of accurate passes that Alabama had was 74%, whereas Arkansas had 59%. Alabama had more possession, not by much, but they had fewer successful dribbles and fewer tackles won. They also had 11 entrances to Arkansas's box, whereas Arkansas had 23 entrances to Alabama's. And the Crimson Tide lost more than double the balls Arkansas lost in their respective own halves. So, you know, again, they kept up, but I really don't feel that they dominated at any point in the game how they did in the first half, or at least how it felt they did in the first half of the Florida game. So the game still seems stretched, but I will say more work looked like was being done in the midfield than in the second half of that Florida game in Gainesville. The back line and midfield for the Crimson Tide dropped a lot, I think mostly because they were having to chase Arkansas more. Arkansas is a very explosive team, especially in their attacks downfield. When they entered Bama's territory and Arkansas's finishing third, aka the Crimson Tide's defending third. But you could tell that the back line was trying to press up more. They were more fluid than they were in the Mississippi State game specifically. They shifted up and down the field a good bit. It did feel like Arkansas controlled the pace. Now, because the back line was dropped and the midfield was sitting lower, not really in a bunker, but in much more of a more defensive mindset than that first half where the press was so aggressive and so high against Florida. Alabama was usually coming in with only two forward, particularly in the second half. And I think this was mostly to allow more players to be back in the midfield to try and win balls from Arkansas in Alabama's defending half, particularly the defending third, and then try and move up field. Now, sometimes having these two forwards produce well, there was one instance in particular in the second half that featured Taylor Morgan and Casey Wirtz. They had a really good look. I believe also Cindy Vincennes and Riley Mattingly also had a really good look. Very dangerous looks from both pairs running in that top two to press. But sometimes it seems like whoever was in that nine role, so playing as the center forward, didn't have much support up top and got closed in by the Arkansas backline too quick to really get anything going. Whereas if they had had more outlets up with them, they had been playing in more of the high press that fans have been seeing Alabama play in for the past few games, I think it's possible they would have gotten more attacks going. Now, Bama seemed to be winning the second ball, but then not controlling to start to build an attack off of that third ball. I think that that is where Arkansas won a lot of the balls within their defensive half and then were able to quickly transition and get their own attacks going. All this being said, the game was tied 1-1 at halftime. This was the first game since the Tennessee game that Alabama did not score in the first few minutes. Arkansas scored first, and then Alabama did not answer until the 40th minute. Macy Clem, she put in work on her own to get that goal unassisted. So they were tied 1-1 at the half. Arkansas had 8 shots with 6 on goal. Alabama had 3 with 2 on goal. Arkansas was given 4 fouls in the first half. Bama was given 5. Arkansas, the Razorbacks, their goalkeeper made 1 save. McKinley Crone for Bama made 5. Arkansas had 3 corners and Bama had 2. So this is all coming into the half. So it did still feel like Alabama was chasing the game a little bit in the second half, but they didn't allow any goals in, which is, again, like not scoring a goal early, different from the past two games. Ultimately, Arkansas outshot Alabama 18-7. Arkansas had 10 shots on goal to Alabama's 2. Both teams were being very aggressive offensively in the final 5 minutes to try and avoid overtime. And I do think it was good that Alabama didn't let any last-minute goals in. I think that it is improvement from the past couple of games. particularly because they had a similar situation to the Mississippi State game where in the last few seconds they had a free kick from the goalie. In this instance, it wasn't from the goalie against the Mississippi State game, but this free kick against Mississippi State in week two ultimately led to the buzzer beater. This game, Alabama handled it differently. They obviously learned from that. So there was 35 seconds left. Arkansas was on attack. Verpale made a stop and started a counterattack. Alabama was awarded a free kick pretty close to their box. So Crone took it, and she took her time to actually get that ball off to avoid the Mississippi State situation where they did it quickly. Ultimately, Mattingly lost the foot race to get to the ball first against the Mississippi State goalkeeper, led to the buzzer beater. So no buzzer beater for this game against the Razorbacks. They didn't give up any last-minute second-half goals, but Arkansas ended the game very quickly after that. They scored the game winner on their first possession of overtime, which was 20 seconds into the 10-minute sudden victory period. So that game ended with the first goal scored. And let's move on to my list of key players. I, again, want to mention Verpale. She showed her wheels again. It seems like maybe it was because Alabama was playing with only two forward for a significant part of the second half that her role looked more like, you know, really putting the gas on to get up and down the side to offer some more support up top. She showed some fancy footwork and was moving with pace while she did it. And I think that she might just be starting to heat up. I am very excited to see what she does in the remaining four regular season games. Also want to shout out Bryn Martin. She was also getting up the field more. There was a couple of instances where she just had really great service up top, up to the top from the wings. She helped to create a few looks, a couple dangerous looks, so that was fun to see. As usual, McKinley Crone. I noticed this game she was pretty vocal, but more of the way that she is vocal is just yelling good and then a player's name. So she's not necessarily as much shouting at her back line as much as she's encouraging them. Now, that's not to say she is afraid to organize them. She certainly will organize them for a set piece if an attack is closing in. She feels she needs them to reposition to offer her more support in some way. But it seems like her experience and athleticism melds really well with her trust in the back line to allow her to just kind of play her game. She's also certainly not afraid to have the ball at her feet. There, I mean, and I think every game, but especially this game, there were a couple of times where she came up and was one-on-one against a Razorback forward well out of her box. So she only could play it with her feet, and she won them. Morgan and Wirtz, I mentioned them briefly earlier, but they were causing problems in the box up in Arkansas territory in the second half. That was fun to watch them. Morgan was also doing some really great damage down the right flank through the first half. So very fun to see them connect well. This is some food for thought. It's not necessarily some of my key players, but something to think about. Mattingly and Pham, so that's Riley Mattingly and Serena Pham, they both had really limited minutes. So Mattingly, as briefly discussed in the week three recap, aka episode three, she missed that game, was listed as unavailable to travel with the team. She's back for this game. She only saw 25 minutes. She came in off the bench. She was not starting. And she got zero shots off. So that's not to say that she wasn't producing looks, that she wasn't drawing defenders. But she wasn't filling that just hungry attacking role for close to the full 90 as Wes Hart mentioned, he wanted to see more from her after that week one game, the beatdown on University of Tennessee. Pham, for the past two games, has not had the starting nod, whereas for the first two, I believe she had. She saw 38 minutes in this game against the Razorbacks. She also had zero shots. Now, the past two games, she has been wearing compression shorts or a thigh wrap of some sort. So I'm not sure if there is an injury concern. I haven't had the opportunity to get that information. But of course, as soon as I do, I will let you all know the scoop. So that's my analysis and my key players. I think this is a great time to move into the conversation with Sam Hallam. But first, we're going to quick break for an advertisement.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Hi, Sam.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little depressed about the state of Alabama soccer right now, not going to lie, but I'm excited to be on again. Excited to talk to you about it.
Yeah, I was going to say that that I'm good didn't sound super convincing. So I'm just going to give you the floor just to quickly just spill your emotions, if that's something you feel like you need to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just probably like you were really excited about this season after that first game against Tennessee. You know, we were ranked coming into the season, so it seemed like things were going really well. And these past few games have just, we've lost a couple and also lost in probably the most heartbreaking fashion you can lose in if you're an Alabama fan. So it's been tough. But the one silver lining is I was just looking at the back half of the schedule, and it does seem like it gets a little bit easier for here. Obviously, there's no easy game in the SEC this year with the condensed schedule, but at least we've knocked out a couple of the harder teams in the SEC. So hopefully we'll get it together and be a little bit better from here. But yeah, it's been a little tough to watch in these past games. I feel like after the 80th minute, I'm just holding my breath, waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah, I can understand that. Condensed season, Alabama is now 1-2-1 on the season. One win, two losses, one tie. Ole Miss playing while we speak. They are in the 80th minute against Auburn. It's 0-0. So they could be headed into a overtime situation. I'm going to be keeping an eye on that. So if Ole Miss wins or draws against Auburn, they will top or tie us on the SEC West leaderboard. And yeah, I mean, definitely, I think we have played a lot of the more difficult teams on our schedule. Obviously, everyone in the SEC is of a very high caliber program. But I think that really one of the biggest matches was this past week against the Razorbacks. They are the SEC West leaders right now, undefeated. If I'm not mistaken, they were the SEC champs from last season. Certainly a impressive program.
Yeah, and I mean, if there's one takeaway that is a little encouraging, it's that, you know, they're the number three ranked team in the country, or they were this past weekend, and we hung with them until overtime. So at least for me, that indicates that going forward and going into the SEC tournament, we can hang with anyone in the country. It's just going to be a matter of sort of clearing up these issues we've had in the last few minutes of regulation and overtime. But there's no doubt that we have the talent to make a run in the tournament.
Yeah, and I think that distinction is important about getting allowing balls in the last few minutes of regulation or in overtime. Because, I mean, Alabama did do well to keep balls out in the second half. It was an overtime that it went in, and it was 20 seconds in, two overtime. To me, just looking at Alabama's seasons historically, it looks like they kind of tend to go on a little, not necessarily full runs, but they go hot and cold a little bit. And just because it is a shortened season, I think you do need more consistency, especially since it is all SEC opponents. I mean, we've already touched on this, but I mean, it's just such a competitive, such an athletic conference for them to be competing in. Last season, so the 2019 season, not the 2020 spring season that was cut short, Bama overall went 10-7-3, and then within the conference 4-4-2, which isn't a bad record, but when you only have 8 games, you'd like that first number to be a little bigger and that middle number to be a little less.
Yeah, and I also wonder sort of how much, I guess, the irregularity of this season has affected things. Obviously, last game, we're missing a couple key players with potential, like, COVID-related quarantines. So you do wonder how much sort of the inconsistencies in the roster and this shortened season have affected the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would affect me. If I were in that position, I think even just in, you know, academics, all the inconsistency and the uncertainty has affected people. So I definitely feel like that's probably part of it. But, you know, at the same time, they're still looking to be competitive. And I think they're doing a pretty good job. But, you know, coming off of a 2-loss streak, a little more of a somber mood than the last time you and I talked. All right, I want to get your prediction for the Ole Miss game. We're playing them on Sunday for the Power of Pink game. But before you give your prediction, I am going to give you and the listeners some background info to help. So Alabama's last meeting with Ole Miss was on October 17th, 2019. So 366 days will have passed until the next match, because that will be on Sunday the 18th. Or I guess it... Is it 367 because of leap days? I don't understand. Like, why do we randomly put a day in? Why does it add to the number of days in the year? Like, I don't really get it. And I guess it's not that pertinent, but it's something that I thought of.
You know, it could have been the leap year affecting Alabama soccer this whole time.
You're maybe right.
One extra day really threw off our preparation.
You're right. I'm going to go back and look at the last leap year, and I'm going to see what Alabama's record was.
That's good. What's the next podcast episode? We'll get a deep dive into the leap year stats of SEC soccer.
Yeah, 2 episodes in 1 week. We'll do a feature investigative journalism episode. I don't know. I don't know if I can get that turned out in less than a week. That seems like I'm really going to have to dig in there. Plenty of interviews means I'm going to have to, like, go to the pro level with players Bama has produced. Like, I'll work on that, but I might have been over ambitious to say 2 episodes in 1 week with that being one. Yeah, I will look into the effects of leap years on Alabama's record. But so the last meeting against Ole Miss was at Ole Miss. There were 1,273 fans, so that'll be a little different from this past weekend. There was like 115, and a little different the next weekend. And you also have to wonder if the fans affect, you know, along with COVID and leap year, the 3 main components of game mentality.
Yeah, and I mean, you and I went to a couple games last year and the year before, and definitely our home atmosphere for women's soccer was pretty great. We had people banging drums and bells and just a lot of fan energy in the stadium. So I'm sure the lack of that is definitely sort of weird for the players, just almost making it feel like a practice situation where there's not obviously some noise still in the stadium, but not nearly as much as there would be.
Yeah, I touched on this a little earlier in the episode in my analysis, but I guess you and I haven't talked about this yet. There was like a very small student section. I don't know if you can really call it a student section because the guy who was leading it is graduated already. But at one point I looked over, I think it was after Alabama had scored the equalizing goal in the first half, and like some song was playing where people were stomping on the bleachers in the beat. And I looked over and the guy who was leading the fan section was just holding up this elephant above his head and like raising it up and down in beat. And I couldn't tell if it was like a statue, if it was a balloon situation, but the fans are trying.
Yeah. Good for the rest of the people that have been, you know, still showing up to report on games and things like that. So
there was some tailgating happening again in the grass area. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, way more fans the last time Bama and Ole Miss met up. So in that game, they tied. They had a 1-1 draw that went to double overtime. I have the box score open on my computer here. Let's look through some stats real quick. So Alabama outshot Ole Miss. They had 20 shots with 11 on goal, and Ole Miss had 17 with 6 on goal. So that's interesting to me because they have been so outshot, particularly by these past two teams when they've lost. So also, as an update, Ole Miss and Auburn have just hit 90 minutes, still 0-0. So looks like they are headed into overtime. So yeah, Ole Miss had fewer shots than Alabama, so you wonder if that's something that we'll see again this week or if it matters. And then Ole Miss was scheduled as Bama's next opponent in the 2020 spring season. It was canceled because of COVID, and it, I think, was going to be in Tuscaloosa. Yes, Ole Miss was going to come to Tuscaloosa on March 28th.
So in terms of my prediction for the game, you just said that Ole Miss and Auburn are about to go into overtime right now. So I assume that overtime will probably last a little bit longer than 20 seconds. So Ole Miss will likely be coming off a short week with an overtime game, so I'm thinking they might be a little tired, and at least I'm hoping Alabama should show up with sort of a point to prove. I think if we as fans have been upset about the last couple games, I'm sure the players have been really upset about the last couple games. And I also am going to go out on a limb here and say that Mattingly gets 2 goals. I think she came into the season really strong in that first game and has been a little quiet since then. And I think as sort of an older player and a leader on the team, she's going to be one of the ones that has to step up and definitely provide some energy on the attacking front.
So you say she gets 2 goals. Do you have a prediction as to how she gets them? Or you just think, doesn't matter, she gets them?
It's a good question. I don't know. I'm gonna make a safe prediction and just say that she gets 2 goals, so I have more of a chance here.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it was... You're out on a limb already, so I can respect it. What's your final score line prediction then? Mattingly gets 2. Does anybody else get 1?
Yeah, I would say 3-1, Bama.
Okay. We'll have to see if you're accurate.
Yeah. Do you have a score prediction for us?
No, I don't have a score prediction. I do agree with you, though, that I think that Mattingly specifically is going to come out kind of with a point to prove. You know, she couldn't travel to the Florida game, was listed as unavailable, and then she saw limited minutes in this game. She didn't get any shots off. Not to say that she wasn't doing work, but I do think that, you know, she's not being that hungry nine that she and Wes Hart both described they wanted her to be in this season. So I do think that, as you know, the team is going to come in with a point to prove. I think you're right. And then I also think that she's probably going to come in pretty hungry to, you know, get back into that starting role, not coming in off the bench, seeing more than, you know, I think she saw like 25 minutes. So seeing more than that and at least getting a couple shots off. While we're talking about predictions, what's your way too early prediction on how deep Bama makes a run in the SEC tournament?
You know, this is so hard with how the SEC is shaping up this year, because it feels like it's really anyone's season in terms of winning the tournament. And even the games that we've lost this year, we've been right in until the very end. So I do think we can definitely hang with anyone in the SEC. I'm going to hold off on giving my prediction for a couple games, because I think the next few weeks for the team will be really telling in terms of the trajectory of the season. Like you said, we have a habit of sort of starting off hot and then going a bit cold in the middle of the season and then ramping it up again towards the end. So I'm hoping we can sort of get some momentum rolling into the tournament. We definitely have a lot of opportunities to do so, getting to play a couple of the lower ranked teams in the SEC in the next few weeks. So I'm not going to quite give a prediction yet, but I do think there'll definitely be some teams that we don't expect to go far in the tournament that kind of pull off a run just because of how close all the SEC teams are athletically this year.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, just even looking at the SEC season so far, Vanderbilt was the ones who knocked Alabama out of the tournament last year. And they made a pretty historic run for the program. It was, I think, the only one of a few times that they made it as far as they did. And Vanderbilt is kind of struggling in the SEC East this season. So, I mean, I definitely agree with you that keeping an eye on the SEC as an entire conference, not just on Alabama, is definitely kind of showing that it is probably anyone's game. But I also see your play here that you're trying to get back on the pod. I see what's happening.
Yeah. See, now you're just forced to let back on. You're going to have to let me back on next week so we can see whether my Ole Miss prediction is accurate. And then after a couple weeks, we'll build up to my SEC tournament prediction.
Okay. I see. I'm not opposed. Well, thank you for coming on to chat with me. It did brighten my time having to talk about a not super fun game to cover. As you have made your prediction and you need to come back on, we're going to have to watch the game first. So Alabama will face Ole Miss on Sunday, October 18th. The game will kick off at 2 p.m. Central Time. It's going to be broadcast on SEC Network. So a nice wrap up to the weekend after football on Saturday. Everything is in Tuscaloosa, College Game Day, the Through Ball, aka this podcast, both big names in their own right.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about the podcast being on Saturday because we're really taken away from the game day viewership. So might have to push it back a little bit just out of respect for ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to come out before the game so people can listen to my analysis and our preview. But maybe it'll get published, you know, late in the week, not Saturday. because, you know, I agree. I don't want to take away from ESPN's viewership. So again, Sam, thank you for coming on. I hope you and everyone else tunes into the game this Sunday. As always, if there are any thoughts you want to give to me or things you want to hear incorporated into future episodes, you can tweet at me. And this has been the Through Ball.